This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. More than 84 million viewers tuned in for Monday night's debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, making it the most watched presidential debate in history. Joining us to discuss the presidential race and the potential impact of the first debate are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, good to talk to you this afternoon.
Great to be here, guys.
Ken, before we get to our conversation, first order of business is the trivia question. So what do you have for us today?
The trivia question is, what, obviously in the wake of the presidential debate that we had on Monday, although I missed the debate because I was watching Monday Night Football, but the Saints and the Falcons, that was some game.
That was good.
What presidential debate resulted in the largest shift in polling numbers in history?
Okay, presidential debate resulted in the largest polling shift in history? Okay, so that's the key thing.
Just tell me the candidates, right?
Okay, if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. The first correct caller will win a political junkie button. And that's funny, Ken, that you brought up Monday Night Football, because I was reading an article that said we had these 84 million people watching the debate on Monday night, and they were talking about how this put a dent into the ratings for Monday Night Football.
I should think so.
And do you remember? And do you remember Donald Trump earlier complaining about the timing of the debates because he said, "Well, you know, we're going to lose a lot of viewership because of Monday Night Football." Not happening.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think he was saying that about football in general. So, Ken, what were your impressions from Monday night? What do you think were the key moments in that debate?
Well, there were so many, and we could also talk about what's happened since the debate, which is also fascinating. But I kind of think that there was one exchange when Donald Trump was talking about, while I'm out campaigning, you were home for several days. And Hillary Clinton said, yes, I was home. I was preparing for the debate, just like I'm preparing to be president. I think the preparation was the big thing that stuck out at me, that Hillary Clinton came to that debate ready. We knew from the longest time that she was preparing. She was reading policy papers. She was talking to experts, whereas the sense all along was Donald Trump was winging it, and it felt like on Monday night he was winging it.
That was by far, I think, her best line of the night. I mean, that was the one that just, like, you know, sucked the air out of the room.
Yeah, but also plus the fact that I think he had opportunities. I mean, we talked
about
a
whole lot of them. Yeah,
I think he did too. I mean, we talked a few weeks ago or weeks earlier with Matt Lauer and the Commander in Chief Forum, where he seemed like he went very tough on Hillary Clinton, but nearly not as tough as Donald Trump. I thought Lester Holt, by and large, the moderator from NBC News, was very good, very effective. But there's no question that he was much tougher on Donald Trump than he was on Hillary Clinton. Yeah. And there were no questions about, for example, the Clinton Foundation, her testimony before the FBI. And so if Lester Holt was going to ask it, one would think that Donald Trump would focus on it. And he did not. He was basically on the defensive or explaining himself for a large portion of the debate.
Yeah, and that was inexplicable to me. I mean, you know, why, you know, he's been doing that in rally after rally after rally for months now, and why he wouldn't do it in front of 84 million Americans watching on television just befuddles me. I mean, I can't figure it out.
I agree with you. It seemed like, for example, like he never expected the birtherism question or the tax return question. He just didn't seem to have coherent answers for it.
And the tax return question, you know, was one of those things where, you know, obviously, you know, she brought up him trying to get the gaming license and have to turn over his tax returns, and indicating that in a few years that he didn't pay any taxes. And then he said, that makes me smart.
Is that something?
I mean, that was totally unnecessary. Why do that to yourself?
And then her follow-up was you, by not paying taxes, you're not contributing to helping the veterans or helping, you know, for the defense of this country.
And his answer was, it would just be squandered.
Yeah, right.
Ken, do you think that to some extent that there's always been the criticism of Trump that he tends to overreact, that he's too thin-skinned, that it's too easy to get under his skin? So do you think maybe Monday night we were seeing his advisors telling him,
go a little slow tonight. Be a little bit more cautious. Don't fly off the handle. You don't want people seeing that side of you. You think maybe they over-prepped him a little bit to react that way?
Well, he was certainly like that for the first third of the debate. I think he actually was doing better than she in the beginning when he was putting her on the defensive about trade deals. I mean, a good portion of his support comes from people who just realize their jobs are being shipped overseas and the economy is rigged against them. And I think that's his strongest argument. I think he was good on it. But then he let her goad him and get under his skin, you know, about the money he got from his father and the taxes. And then he just seemed to be just reacting and responding and mostly going back to the one-liners. And if you look at believe it or not, there was somebody who was doing an interruption count, and he interrupted her 51 times. She interrupted him 17 times. Yeah, not that those numbers matter, but it just showed how petulant he was. And the funny thing is, Mark, in answer to your question, his campaign staffers afterwards kept talking about how restrained he was, how it was so great. He didn't talk about Bill Clinton's sex past, and so he was so restrained. Boy, if that's restrained, I don't know what,
Yeah, I mean, at the end there, he was talking about, I could talk about some things, but it wouldn't be right. I thought about it, and everybody knew what he was talking about.
Right. The next debate is going to be a town hall.
Yeah.
Town hall forum.
That's going to be interesting.
Is Donald Trump going to start talking about Bill Clinton's sex past in a town hall forum? It doesn't seem like that's the right
vehicle
for that. I don't think
that would probably be a good idea.
Yeah.
We got some people lined up to try the trivia question here, Ken. So let's take a few of them and see if anybody knows the answer here. Amber in Centerville. Amber, what do you think the answer is?
I was thinking it was the Kennedy Nixon debate.
I expected most people to say Kennedy Nixon, but the fact of the matter is, Kennedy and Nixon went into those debates in 1960 virtually tied in the polls. They came out of the debates tied in the polls, and John F. Kennedy barely won in November. So the polling really didn't move that much in the polls. It made him look more presidential, John F. Kennedy, but it didn't really change the polls much.
Right.
Okay, let's try Valerie in Batavia.
Well, that was my guess, so can I change it?
Nope. Sorry.
Why did Valerie tell you that? Valerie.
Because Valerie is an honest person.
Yes.
And she's not going to...
Which means I won't be running for office anytime soon.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Well, if you did, I'd vote for you, Valerie.
Thank you, Valerie. We appreciate you trying there.
I never see any Valerie for President buttons anywhere, and now I know why.
Okay.
Too honest.
Let's see. Rob in downtown. Rob...
You know what? I had to say yes, Nixon, Kennedy.
Okay, you're right, Ken. And that would have been my thought too, because of course, the question you're asking is shift in the polls,
right? Not in perception, and that's why I like the answers, because Kennedy Nixon did make Kennedy seem presidential. Remember, Nixon was running on experience counts in 1960. Kennedy was thought to be too green, too young, and then by the end of the debate, he said, "Well, he matched up fine against Nixon," but the polls didn't really change that much.
Yeah, you know what's interesting too is if you read about this, study this, people who watched it said Kennedy was the winner. People who listened, correct me if I'm wrong, Ken, they typically thought Nixon was the winner on that debate.
You know, actually, that is an urban myth. I mean, there was one poll that came out right after 1960, and it was about 20 people, and it was really more man on the street inferences. But a lot of people feel that the joke has long been on television, Kennedy on radio, Nixon. But the point is that Kennedy not only stood up to Nixon and was equal with Nixon on the issues, but he looked better. He did. He had better makeup. He looked rested. And of course, Nixon was sick. He banged his knee against the car door. He was in the hospital, right. I think when he was an electroshave, or he put some kind of hastily put on makeup at the end, and he just looked
kind of
wan.
Got that tan going.
Right.
Okay, let's see here. We've got Mike in Clifton, and let's see if Mike knows the answer to this question. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Carter Reagan, 1980.
Carter Reagan, 1980 is the correct answer. Wait a second. Wait a second. It can't be that many people listening to the show. Come on. What is that? But I mean, but it's Mike is exactly right. Jimmy Carter refused to have more than one debate with Ronald Reagan. When he finally agreed to it, I think it was like October 28th, a week before the election, Reagan cleaned his clock. Reagan talked about, you know, there you go again, and are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And he was so good that Carter did have a slight lead going into that debate. After the debate, Reagan opened up a huge lead and won a landslide in November.
I was actually in the room for that debate.
You were?
Up in Cleveland. Yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing. I mean, I was this young reporter from the little Troy Daily News, and they sent me up there, and I managed to get actually inside the hall.
Wow.
And when he used that line, I mean, you could just feel it. I mean, this is over. This is done.
But Howard, I mean, I shouldn't be mean here, but weren't you there for Lincoln Douglas?
By the way, congratulations
to
you,
I'm
Mike.
Talking about presidential, not Senate races, right?
Yeah. Okay. And congratulations, Mike. Stay on the line so we can find out where to send your
and
prize.
By the way, I got it right, too.
Yeah, he says so. I saw him write it down after the correct answer from Mike. So
do you remember that famous line?
There was only two possibilities, Ford Carter or Reagan Carter.
And actually, as bad as Ford was in those debates, remember, there's no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe.
Right.
He came back from 30 points down, almost won that election, but not because of the polls.
No.
Remember Jimmy Carter's famous line about talking. I asked my 9-year-old daughter about nuclear proliferation. Oh, my.
But Ken, I have to ask you, historically speaking, have first debates, did they have a track record of really making that big of a difference, or the particular ones we're talking about just the exception?
Well, you know something, I always think of Mondale and Reagan in 1984, where Reagan looked so old in the first debate. Mondale looked like he was moving up, and people thinking, wow, is Reagan losing it, and does Mondale have a chance? And a lot of people looked at that first debate and said, something's going on here. And then in that second debate, Reagan completely came back. He had that famous line about Mondale's youth and inexperience, and basically the election was over right there. Yep. So sometimes, you look at a first debate and say, I wonder if something's happening. In this case, the second debate is what did it for Reagan.
Well, and I always think back to the 2012 when in that first debate, President Obama had such a lackluster performance.
Right.
And everybody said, Mitt Romney was the obvious winner, yet that ended up not mattering in the long run.
You're right. I mean, that's why they have more than one debate. And that's why they have it more than a week out, unlike Carter Reagan in 1980, which was a week, and Carter never had time to recover. But remember that first debate? Obama seemed very listless, very passive. Romney was on the ascendancy, and it was a close election, like three points or so.
That's also why they do different formats, too.
Yes.
I mean, if you remember back in 92, with Clinton and George H.W. Bush and Ross Perot on the stage in a town hall format, obviously Bill Clinton just cleaned his clock.
And what stands out, Howard, what stands out for you in that debate the most?
Bush, the shot of Bush looking at his watch, like, when is this going to be over? Is this thing over yet?
And that sticks in your head for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
It was one shot real quick. TV went to Bush, and Bush is standing there looking at his wristwatch.
Like, you always
think, when am I going to get out of here?
Right.
You always think of these great lines in presidential debate, but Howard's exactly right. Even this was a nonverbal move, but it looked like Bush said, oh, God, he's just.
But it was a look on his face, too.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they say body language is so important in these town hall events.
Right.
I mean, people are really watching that.
And Clinton was so good at, he would walk up to these people, he would look them in the eye, he had that, empathy for, what people were saying to him. I mean, he was brilliant at that thing. I think they won it for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. And remember in 2000 with Gore and Bush, and Gore would always do those sighs. Like, and I was always told that size doesn't matter. So, but yet the size matters in that debate.
You did not say that, please.
Wait, is
we're going to have to. We're going to have to take a break.
Let's see if we'll still be on the air.
We will continue our conversation with Ken and Howard, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. As a special thank you gift for this hour only, for a contribution of any amount, you'll get a Political Junkie button. So you'll be supporting great programs like this on 91.7 WVXU, and you won't have to answer Ken's trivia question to get one of his buttons. So make that contribution, 513-419-7155, or you can go online at WVXU.org or WMUB.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and my guest this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin, and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson, as we discuss Monday night's presidential debate and what's ahead in the race for the White House. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, is there any polling out at this point, Ken or Howard, that shows if there's been any kind of an impact from Monday night's debate?
I've seen, of course. I was going to say, I've seen, of course, you know, unofficial polls that show that as far as who won the debate, it was clear for Hillary Clinton. But as far as the
impact,
the general election numbers, I have not seen movement. It was clear, though, that going into the debate, Donald Trump was gaining and gaining fast, not only in national polls, but in key battleground state polls. And the Clinton campaign was very, very nervous. It was tightening in Pennsylvania, which is a clear worry for the Clinton campaign. Now, the Clinton campaign feels that they may have weathered the storm and maybe the debate made a difference, but so far there's no evidence for that.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, if you look at some of the informal polling that was done, you're talking about who won, who lost. There were several informal online polls that were done, and those showed the opposite, that those folks thought Trump had won. But again, the criticism of those is they aren't scientific, so you don't know.
You look at some of the focus groups that were done, and by some reputable people that, you know, indicated that she was the winner on points.
But you remember after the debate, Donald Trump was in the spin room talking about how all these online polls showed he won. Well, if we go by online polls, Ron Paul would have been elected president in 2012. So, I mean, you have to look at those online polls with a suspicious look.
Have to look at the history and the trends
Right, and the methodology. I mean, we have a bakery here in town that sells cookies with pictures of the candidates on them, and it's the annual cookie poll. We could go by that if you want.
Well, actually, I think that was showing a tightening race, wasn't it?
I think it
was. Which is kind of what the other polls are showing at this point. So maybe there's something to the cookie poll.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. But other than what the statistics are showing, Ken, what's your gut feeling on this? Do you think that this first debate had any kind of influence on voters? Is it swaying anybody?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, remember the famous Donald Trump line that I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and my supporters won't leave me? I don't think that, even though that Donald Trump was on the defensive about women and tax returns and his opposition to the war in Iraq and not paying taxes, not paying the people who work for him, the being sued for bias and housing, all the things that both Holt and Clinton were lobbying against him, I don't think he lost any support. I think that maybe the undecideds remain undecided. I think most of the undecideds are Republicans who can't stand Hillary Clinton but have great reservations about Trump. Yeah. I don't think anybody moved in Trump's way. And at the same time, I think that, you know, we saw some polls that indicated that Latinos were maybe kind of on the fence, ambivalent about Hillary Clinton. Well, I think his throwing back his words about Miss Universe, that she was Miss Piggy and Miss Hospitality because she was Latina, obviously hurt Trump. And
Miss Housekeeping.
Miss Housekeeping.
What did I say?
Hospitality.
Housekeeping.
But he's done with the Latino vote. I mean, that's gone.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Jim in Oakley. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. I wanted to comment on something that I haven't heard any other commentators mention, and that is that I was truly offended by the amount of attention that Trump paid to his financial success and wealth, and I can't help finding it a little curious that there's so much working class support for a man who spends so much time carrying on about how rich he is.
Well, you make a good point. He did a number of times, and he kept talking about investing in this and investing. I built this. I invested in that. I think where it really probably hit home for a lot of people was the thing he said about paying taxes and not paying taxes in his case, and saying that makes me smart. Well,
the same, okay.
A whole lot of working people out there are looking at that and say, okay, yeah, it'd be real smart not to pay taxes, but I have to do it, and why don't you?
Ken?
But at the same time, there are a lot of people out there who either have lost jobs or are being paid less, or their wages are stagnant in at least the last 8 years, if not more, and they feel that Trump gives you more confidence. He's not going to be business as usual, politics as usual, not the status quo. And right now, for people who are hurting economically and even desperate economically, the status quo is not the way to go. And maybe, as Trump said to black voters, why not? Maybe a lot of these middle-class voters are saying, why not? What have we got to lose? I mean, of course, they have a lot to lose if it's the wrong decision. But right now, you know, I see the appeal of a Donald Trump.
Well, and don't you think his position on trade and all the trade deals, he says, we've made some bad deals in the past. I'll make better deals that aren't going to take jobs out of our country. Don't you think to some extent that has some appeal?
That's as strong as case. And matter of fact, we talk about all the misstatements and so-called lies that Donald Trump has said, and at least during the debate. But Hillary Clinton saying that I did not say that the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal was a gold standard. She said, well, I didn't really say that. I said I hoped it would be. But she did say that. So I think her weakest point in the debate and Trump's strongest point was over trade.
And I think that explains why that issue alone explains why Donald Trump has a lead in a state like Ohio. You know, you go to the Mahoning Valley, you go to Toledo, you go up and down the Ohio River in eastern Ohio. And that message that Trump has on trade really resonates with people.
Does it help him in states like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Indiana too? So, yeah. 513-419.
You go to western Pennsylvania, I mean, western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio are basically the same place.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk to John in Clifton. Hi, John.
Hello. Good to be able to talk to you. I heard recently, in fact, it was the same day of the debate, Deutsche Welle actually looking at a poll of the Twitter feed that they had, and they said that the Twitter feed analysis that they were running was showing that those people online were picking Trump over Clinton as the winner.
So you're wondering if there's any validity to that, Ken?
Yeah, well, obviously it's a very selective population. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of remarkable and rather unscientific in that sense.
Well, you know that there's so many ways to explain or try to explain it. You do know that Donald Trump has basically been living on Twitter this past year. That a lot of the coverage of the presidential campaign has been about what Donald Trump tweeted that day, which is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know what it means. I think that Twitter is a phenomenon, just like talk radio was a phenomenon 10, 15, 20 years ago. And it ultimately, I don't know what representative it is of the country. Of course, not everybody has a computer and not everybody's into Twitter. But it doesn't surprise me that people who like to be engaged online like that have decided to pick Donald Trump. But again, I don't know what that means. And I'm not saying it's wrong. And I don't even know if who's leading nationally. And that's what makes this whole thing. I mean, the media, I mean, I sat there and watched there, and for three quarters of the debate, I'm looking at Donald Trump and saying, about what he says about women, and I'm not going to release my taxes, but I will release them if you release your 33,000 emails. I'm saying, what happened to the audit? I thought the audit was so important. There were so many contradictions that Donald Trump made of himself, and yet I know that when all was said and done, I don't know what changes. So, just like Hillary Clinton's big lead after the conventions, I don't know how long that lasted. It didn't last that long.
Not very long.
And I don't know what this debate means. And, of course, we have another debate coming up in St. Louis on October 9th, and we'll see what that means. And that's the town hall meeting.
And I'd like to remind folks that we do have our WVXU WMUB Fall Fun Drive going on right now. And as a special thank you gift during this hour only while we have Ken on with us, if you contribute any amount at 513-419-7155, you will get a Political Junkie button. So, again, contribution of any size, 513-419-7155. Or even if you pledge at WVXU.org or WMUB.org, you will get one of Ken's Political Junkie buttons, and I'm holding one of them in my hands. These things are a thing of beauty. Ken Rudy's Political
priceless.
Junkie,
yes.
Red, white, and blue, so it's very patriotic.
We love them. I keep mine.
I wear mine a lot. So,
right. Mark, would I be out of line? I know I'm risk. I know I did not work on this with you beforehand, but... What if, like, we have these very rare, very unusual, very limited number of Political Junkie pins, those expensive pins made for the conventions.
Yeah.
Do you think people who gave $100 to WVXU could get a free Political Junkie convention pin that says Cleveland and Philadelphia on
now
it?
Now you're talking. That's good. Yeah.
I mean, it's a gorgeous pin, and there are very few of them left. But I think for a $100 contribution to VXU, I will gladly give people... a convention pin from a Political Junkie convention pin.
Okay, so, you're saying a convention pin
right.
for a $100 contribution. And we have nobody official for membership.
Now you have Cleveland and Philadelphia. Right?
Howard, we need to make an executive decision here. So
I think this is
I say sure.
Now,
sure.
As you know, as Ken knows, when you're collecting buttons at political conventions, you want to get the ones that say the name of the city and the date and all that kind of thing.
And it's not a regular button. It's one of those gold, those gorgeous multicolored pins.
Right, you're talking about a pin, not a button. There's
right,
a big difference.
Pin.
Oh, yeah.
The button's still available for contribution of any size. We will say that. And then the pin, as you're saying, Kenny, since you're being so nice to offer these up for a contribution of $100 or more.
I think this is the most generous... offer, and we should make it available to
okay,
our
and I'll blame it on you if we get yelled at for this.
Okay. Yeah, you can, well, that's all right. I'm
Howard
used to
said
it,
it was
so,
okay.
By
okay.
the way, this is Ken and Howard's last day on WVXU.
Yeah. Oh, 513-419-7155 to make a donation. If you'd like to chat with us, it's 513-419-7100. And let's talk with Benjamin in Delhi. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
I'm curious why the third party isn't being talked to about being involved in these debates. Or is there a certain threshold they need to achieve to be included? Or
yes. Yeah, the presidential the Commission on Presidential Debates sets these rules, and the threshold is 15% in how many polls?
A natural average of maybe about 8 polls, right.
Yeah. And clearly, neither Gary Johnson nor Jill Stein come close to that threshold. Now, you can make an argument about, you know.
How long has that standard been around,
setting
Ken?
The threshold. How long is.
Yeah, how long has that particular standard been around? Does that date back to.
Last 3 or 4. I mean, of course, you know, Ross Perot was the last third-party candidate
right.
who was in a debate. He was there in 1992. Of course, he had like 25% of the polls when the debates happened.
Yeah.
He wound up with 19. But you know something? Well, first of all, I understand that Gary Johnson's numbers in Aleppo is like 35%. So that's really, really good. But the point is that unless a candidate is in a debate, most Americans will have no idea who he or she is.
Yeah.
That goes for Gary Johnson of the Libertarians. It goes for Jill Stein of the Green Party. And unless they have that 15% threshold... I mean, there are some people who argue that if he or she is on enough ballots that would give him two or her 270 electoral votes,
they should be
in the debate.
Right.
And that's the case. Gary Johnson's on the ballot in all 50 states. So mm-hmm. with that grading system, he should be
on the debate system. Right.
Yeah, but he's not, obviously.
And Ken, it's interesting. You're talking about Gary Johnson. The what's Aleppo comment, and then I think it was yesterday that he was being interviewed, I think, on Morning Joe. And they asked him, who is your favorite world leader and why? And he went blank again.
Not only did he went blank, I understand that he did say, though, that he understood that Kim Jong-un's father was ill. But you know, that joke is much funnier.
You've done
on
that.
Paper.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've done. Yeah. I only have six jokes, Howard. Okay. I'll do the same jokes over and over again.
All right.
Yeah, I have to. I think that have to think that neither of those incidents is helping him in any way, shape, or form.
But you know, then you compare it to what Donald Trump has said about foreign affairs, right, also sure. about NATO, about Russia, about Putin. I mean, you say, well, we should disqualify Gary Johnson because of the Aleppo comment or the world leader comment, but take a look at what all the candidates say before you just eliminate one.
But I think, you know, the bottom line on the debates is that the Commission on Presidential Debates has decided that you have to meet that threshold in the polls because that indicates that you are, in fact, someone who could possibly be president of the United States. And Ken makes a really good point. Gary Johnson is on all 50 state ballots, so conceivably he could be president of the United States. He could get 270 electoral votes. He's not going to, but in theory, at least, he could.
And just as Ralph Nader may have affected the 2000 election, look, he only got 1.7% of the vote in Florida in 2000, but those 97,000 votes were enough to, So, I mean, it's very possible that Gary Johnson's numbers in, let's say, Utah, which is supposed to be, he's doing very well in Utah, or another close Republican state, could cost one candidate or the other that state, although it seems like from what I've seen from polls that both Gary Johnson, who's averaging about between 8% and 10% now, and Jill Stein on the Green is about 3% of the polls, most of them are coming out of Hillary Clinton's numbers. It's not hurting Trump, it's hurting Clinton, and that's why President Obama yesterday went around and said that a vote for a third party candidate is a waste. I don't remember any president ever saying that a vote for somebody else was the wrong thing to do. Look, I just want everybody to vote. I don't care who people vote for, but I never saw a president saying a vote for a third party would be a waste. Yeah. I think everybody's conscious of what happened in 2000.
And that message is pretty much directed, I think, at the millennials and those folks who, you know, are saying, you know, we're not enamored with Hillary Clinton. We certainly aren't going to vote for Donald Trump. So we're going to look at the alternatives, and the alternatives are Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. And that's where their numbers are coming from. But they have got to move Hillary's campaign, that is, has to move those people.
Hence, that's why you had Bernie Sanders making an appearance.
Bernie Sanders,
with Hillary
Elizabeth Warren, on college campuses, Michelle Obama. I mean, they're all trying, you know, to get these millennial voters to warm up, or at least to come out and cast a ballot for Hillary Clinton, which is really a ballot against Donald Trump.
And as Mark just said, I mean, the fact that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders were in campaign together yesterday in New Hampshire, a state that Bernie Sanders won overwhelmingly, and a state where a considerable number of Sanders supporters are still hesitant about Hillary Clinton. So she still has work to do with like five weeks to go before the election. 5 weeks, my goodness.
I can't believe that. More political talk with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson coming up. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. And as a special thank you gift during this hour only, you can get one of Ken's political junkie buttons for a contribution of any size when you make that call to 513-419-7155. Also, Ken's been very generous today. He's offered us an additional thank you gift, and that is a political junkie convention pin if you make a contribution of $100 or more at 513-419-7155. So that's during this hour only while we have Ken on the air with us. 513-419-7155 to make that contribution. And again, we're talking the latest political news with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. So Ken, next debate's October the 9th, Washington University in St. Louis, going to be a town hall style event. When did the vice president's debate?
That's actually next week, next Tuesday.
Okay, that's coming up much sooner.
October 4th,
Yep.
Got to ask you, though. I mean, we talk about the impact that presidential debates have. Do vice presidential debates really do that much?
You know, actually, I was thinking one of the trivia questions I could have asked on the show was, name the running mates for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, because I've long since forgotten it. Yeah. Look, you know, everybody remembers the debate in 1988 between Lloyd Benson and Dan Quayle, and of course, Dan Quayle saying he's had as much experience as John Kennedy did. And remember Lloyd Benson's famous, "I knew Jack Kennedy, Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy." Well, everybody felt that Dan Quayle looked foolish, that Lloyd Benson had a great line. And yet the Bush-Quayle ticket won 40 out of 50 states that year. So, and remember when Geraldine Ferraro debated George H.W. Bush, the vice presidential debate in 1984, you know, she was really much stronger than George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush. And yet, of course, Reagan Bush won 49 states. So it does bring drama. It does bring some memorable moments. But ultimately, I don't think it affects the top of the ticket voting.
Yeah, it really doesn't. People don't vote for the vice presidential candidate.
But although, as odd as this year has been,
you want to look at, you want to take a look at these people and say, okay, you know, would I be comfortable with this person in the Oval Office if something happened to Donald Trump or to Hillary Clinton?
And this has just been such an odd year, though. I just have to keep wondering if things are not going to follow the usual conventional wisdom.
Well, that's true. And look, I'm not trying to sound ghoulish or ageist, but if you just look at the actuarial tables, Donald Trump is 70 years old. He'd be the oldest president ever elected. Right. Hillary Clinton at 68 would be the second oldest after Ronald Reagan ever elected for the first time. So I mean, it's just something to pay attention to. And by the way, their names are Mike Pence and Tim Kaine, just in case people have forgotten.
And, yeah, it is important in that way.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk with Eddie in Forest Park. Hi, Eddie.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
I just want to make a comment about our politicians. They're going to bring all of these jobs back here, especially Donald Trump. And just about every lot of business in this country is owned by the Chinese. And he's going to bring a lot of business and jobs back here in this country. Now, what I would like to know is where he's going to get the workers to work them. I've been in this world a long time, and I used to live in Youngstown. And I remember when the steel mill was booming up there, steel mill country. And they had all of these jobs and nobody to work them. And they had to import Puerto Ricans to come in this country and work. So you can get these jobs in here, but you don't have anybody to work them because our people are so ignorant, they say that it don't pay enough money, so why should they work them?
Okay, so Ken, go ahead, and Howard, what do you think?
Well, Eddie makes an interesting point. I mean, first of all, the way when he started off about he's going to get all the companies that went to China and bring them all back. Who makes Donald Trump's ties? Who makes Donald Trump's clothing? Who makes Donald Trump's everything? It's made in China. So for him to say that I'm going to have punitive actions against these companies for leaving the country, for leaving the U.S. and working in China and Mexico, and whereas all of Donald Trump's work is in these countries like China, is just kind of interesting. And of course, there are a lot of people who say that, a lot of employers who say that if it weren't for the nation's immigration policies, Eddie's right, we wouldn't have people who could work on what X, Y, or Z kind of line of work. And with Donald Trump talking about strengthening the border and limiting immigration and being hypocritical about businesses overseas, you just wonder how realistic Donald Trump's plans are.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at some of the jobs have been lost, and they're not going to come back. A lot of these smokestack industry jobs, and you got to basically start thinking about retraining people for a new kind of work.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Something interesting happened at the end of last week that I wanted to ask both of you about, and this was Ted Cruz throwing his support to Donald Trump. I'm wondering what you make of that. And, of course, prior to that, we had the comments from the head of the RNC about get on board or else. So
right.
I'm just wondering if there's any tie between the two, Howard.
Yeah, of course it was. I mean, you know, I think he looks around the political landscape and thinks, you know, okay, if Donald Trump fails, somebody's going to have to run for president in 2020, and it might as well be him. And he wants to be in the good graces of the political party establishment. You know, how he can do it is just beyond me after what was said during the primary season.
Well, he said some pretty harsh things about Trump.
Well, yeah. He said some pretty harsh things about Trump, but Trump said some pretty harsh things about
him,
about his family.
Yeah.
His wife, you know, somehow bizarrely accusing Cruz's father of being involved in John F. Kennedy's assassination. I mean, it's unbelievable, this kind of stuff. And then you walk out in public and say, this is the man I think should be president. It just boggles my mind.
I understand he also offered to help him with debate prep next time.
Yes, yes.
Ken?
Yeah, no, I agree with what Howard said. I mean, the attacks on his wife's looks, the fact that his father was working with Lee Harvey Oswald, is just beyond belief. But I think, as Howard said, I think that the most important thing for the way Cruz is looking at it is 2020, when he's obviously planning to run for president again. But you also look at the John Kasichs of the world and the Jeb Bush and the Bush families of the world and the Koch families of the world say, look, even if it means electing Hillary Clinton president, I am not backing somebody who just insulted everybody and has just made these unbelievable comments about women and the handicapped and Muslims and Latinos. And so they're staying out this election. But Ted Cruz had a decision to make. I mean, but, you know, there are a lot of people who feel the same way about Bernie Sanders backing Hillary Clinton. When he gave speeches at the Democratic convention praising her, he got booed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, both sides have long memories. The question is just given whether the kind of ugliness that Ted Cruz was subjected to by Donald Trump, it's endorsement does seem puzzling. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I think it was on Face the Nation, Rince Priebus, the head of the RNC, you know, kind of spanked John Kasich for not getting on board this thing. And
well, there's no question
Kasich
that
has absolutely no intention of doing that.
Yeah,
there's no question that 2020 people will remember who backed Trump and who didn't, and decide what decision was more honorable.
Right.
So Kasich is viewing this as this is my path to 2020.
They're both kind of rolling the dice to see
just
what
in
happens.
Different ways, yeah.
Right.
So, in terms of the Senate races, Howard, how is this? Because I remember that the original thinking was that having Trump at the top of the ticket was going to really hurt a lot of the GOP Senate candidates, but is it shaping up that way? Or?
Well, if you look at some of the key races, you know, Senate races around the country, the Republican Senate candidates are outpolling Trump for the most part. I mean, it's certainly true in Ohio. I mean, Trump has a small lead in Ohio, but Rob Portman is obviously looks like he's running away with this campaign against Ted Strickland, and it's looking less and less likely every day that Democrats are going to be successful in winning back the Senate.
So they're changing. Go ahead, Ken.
Would you agree?
I was going to say, I'm not convinced. I mean, I do think that Portman is going to win in Ohio because I think he's running a much better campaign than Ted Strickland, and he's a very good candidate. But look, I mean, I think the Senate race in Illinois with Mark Kirk is gone for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. I think Ron Johnson is going to lose to Russ Feingold in Wisconsin. That's two. Evan Bayh has a very good shot in Indiana. That's three. The Democrats need four. I don't know if I'm blaming Donald Trump for this, but I think a lot of this is all politics as local.
Well, and so if that's Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Well, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, look at those states. North Carolina is now close, which I can't believe, and I probably don't think that the Republicans will lose it, but all they need is four. Now it's easy to say all they need is four, but if they win Illinois, if they win Wisconsin, that's two. If they win Indiana, three, and then you have a lot of choices for that fourth state, so it'll be very, very close. It's just that Ohio looks like will not be one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk with Hannah in College Hill. Hi, Hannah.
Hi. I wanted to ask Ken and Howard to comment on how other countries around the world are reacting to this loose cannon, you know, thin-skinned candidate, and I think we know who, will be received.
How will the rest of the world react if Donald Trump's elected? Okay, thanks, Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, we know how they're reacting right now. I mean, mm-hmm. I am hearing from people all over the place who either have just returned from overseas, who are still overseas, and who can't believe what's going on here. But honestly, I speak to a lot of Americans who can't believe what's going on here, too. So I think the world, as much as it's scratching its head and wondering how did the U.S. ever get to this position, I think there are a lot of people here who have that same quizzical question.
Yes, and can't explain it to them.
Yeah.
I mean, I have friends in who are from the United States who are working in Germany, their German friends are just coming to them constantly and saying, "What is going on?"
Every question.
I mean, has your country gone mad? I mean, what is wrong with the United States?
But look at us, though. Look at us. I mean, in all fairness, I know we're running out of time, but look at the two of us. We're sitting here saying, how ridiculous is the United States for backing somebody like Donald Trump?
Yeah.
But it's the polls are 50-50.
Oh, yeah.
There's something that we're – I mean, I understand what the unease is. I understand what the dissatisfaction is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just a fringe amount of people. It's not just deplorables.
No.
It could be half the country.
It's not deplorables. I mean, I talk to some of these people. I mean, they're normal, decent human beings. But they happen to agree.
Did you think that the deplorables was Hillary Clinton's version of Mitt Romney's 47% comment, maybe?
Well,
I do.
Yeah.
And just like, and also like Obama saying, those who pick, who rely on guns and religion, it's kind of an elitist kind of comment. And mm-hmm. I think she made a mistake by saying half of his supporters.
Yeah.
But is it true that many of his supporters are deplorable? Absolutely. Just go online, go on Twitter.
Oh,
and
see
this racist, xenophobic, homophobic, misogynist comments. It's just, I've never, it's the ugliest I've ever seen, and it's been getting ugly for quite some time now.
Well,
I mean, if you think if it was ugly with a black man running for president in 2008 and 2012,
oh yeah, there's some really ugly stuff going on out there. Yeah.
So, Ken, what's your expectation for the next presidential debate? What do you think?
Well, something obviously Donald Trump needs to prepare. I think he's convinced that winging it is not going to work for him. The question is, how can he expose? I mean, he's so anxious to go off on Bill Clinton and all his peccadilloes and his, things like that. But I don't know if the town hall forum.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit tougher for him to do that kind of thing in that kind of a format.
Yeah, you need to listen to the questioners and respond to them and respond to their hopes.
Right. You're going to have questions from actual people, and you're going to have to listen to them and respond to them directly.
And that's true about Hillary Clinton too, because remember,
absolutely.
Her unfavorables are very high as well. Don't
you
forget
bet.
That.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
Well, Ken and Howard, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
I wish we had something to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. It's
fun. Huh? Political junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives or programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai, and Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Each Friday on Cincinnati Edition, we present an in-depth look at the developments behind the headlines of stories affecting the tri-state. This week, we'll get an update on the problems uncovered at the Cincinnati VA Medical Center during a Scripps Washington Bureau and WCPO Insider Joint Investigative Series, and we'll hear about the latest business news in Greater Cincinnati. That's our weekly news review on the next Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.